जय रामाराव कुंजनिहारी कपिजाना वाला बागरे वाला धारी
Yoga Patai, by the procedures of the yoga system. Anvikshiksha, by logical analysis. Cha, also. Vijaya, by spiritual knowledge. Mama, my. Archa, worship. Upasanabi, by adoration, etc. Va, or. Na, never. Anyai, by other means. Yogyam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the object of meditation. Smaret, one should focus on. Mana, the mind. Yama divi yoga patai. Anvikshiksya cha vidyaya. Amarkopasana birva. Nanya yogyam smarin mana. Yama divir yoga pata. Anvikshas shiksha cha vidyaya. Amarchopasana birva. Nanyar yogyam smarin mana. Yamadibir yoga patar. Anvikshiksha cha vidyaya. Mamarkopasana birva. Nanyar yogyam smarin mana. Translation and purport of Disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Through the various disciplinary regulations and the purificatory procedures of the yoga system through logic and spiritual education or through worship and adoration of me, one should constantly engage his mind in remembering the personality of Godhead, the goal of yoga. No other means should be employed for this purpose. Purport. The word va is significant in this verse, for it indicates that one engaged in the worship and adoration of the personality of Godhead need not trouble himself with disciplinary, regulatory, and purificatory procedures of yoga, nor with the grueling intricacies of Vedic studies and logic. Yogyam, or the most appropriate object of meditation, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed throughout Vedic literature. One who directly takes to the worship of the Lord should not employ other methods, for full dependence on the Lord is in itself the supreme process of perfection. Om jnana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Hare Krishna. So in the purport to this verse, an extremely important point is made that distinguishes the Vaishnava philosophy from other spiritual paths or disciplines based on the Vedic version or even based on the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita talks about these paths that are mentioned here, a path of yoga, a path of jnana, and a path of bhakti. So the question maybe arises, why are different paths presented and discussed in Bhagavad Gita? In answer to that question, you'll find the differentiation between a lot of different spiritual disciplines. Yayatam mam papajyante tam satayva bhajami aham. Krishna is explaining that there may be differently situated or differently qualified individuals, but ultimately everyone is dependent upon him and dependent upon reciprocation from him. And so one may desire the practice of yoga, one may desire the practice of jnana in an attempt to reach the Supreme. So Krishna provides those avenues, those paths are there. Different people are different. They have different inclinations. And so Krishna reciprocates by making paths available to them. Yoga, jnana. But the understanding in the Vaishnava philosophy is that these are not different paths independently leading to the Supreme Lord, but that they're more like we teach in the Bhakti Shastri, the yoga ladder. There are various stages based on one's qualifications that take you to different understandings, different destinations on the one path leading back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yatamat Tatapat, this philosophy is there, that whatever path you take, they all lead to the same goal. So It doesn't matter. Take the path of yoga, take the path of jnana, take the path of bhakti. That's cool. But that's not our philosophy. Rather, our philosophy is based on the clear understanding that according to one's qualification, according to one's spiritual practice, one goes to different, get one achieves different goals, but those goals are outside the path of bhakti. Those goals are partial understandings or partial revelations of the one Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it depends on one's qualifications. In the path of yoga, one undergoes various methods. It was described, I think, in the class yesterday. Who was talking about about the paths of yoga, the different steps? Yama, niyama. Was that you? Somebody this week was talking about the paths of yoga. But yoga, one undertakes different processes, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, jnana, and samadhi. But the realization that one gets is the paramatma. One realizes the paramatma in the heart by that process. One does not realize Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the paramatma, a partial representation of the Supreme Lord. By jnana, by practicing knowledge, and going through what the purport describes here as grueling intricacies of Vedic study and logic. That sound attractive to anybody? Grueling intricacies. By the path of jnana, one can reach nirvishesha brahman, the impersonal absolute. Impersonal absolute is we understand to be the glaring effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Not Bhagavan Sri Krishna, but the merging into his effulgence. That can be achieved that way. And of course, if one is not even interested in a spiritual destination, but settles for material sense enjoyment, one can practice the process of karma, and by that achieve the heavenly realms. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has rejected all of these processes and stressed only bhakti. That's the purpose of this chapter in the 11th canto here, which is entitled Pure Devotional Service. Bhakti only. And in the purport, they point out, the authors point out this word va, which is used to distinguish the path of bhakti from these other paths. They may be all on the ultimate, on the same path, trying to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but by taking lower steps, lower qualifications, one gets lower goals, let's say, lower goals. Of course, paramatma realization, I mean, I would take it. But much more is available in the path of bhakti. So, why is bhakti exclusively recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Vaishnava tradition? Well, there are certain characteristics about the path of bhakti which distinguish it from the others. First being that, and I think most importantly, that bhakti is not dependent on the performance of karma, jnana, or yoga. It's not dependent on them. In other words, with no other qualification, especially in this age of Kali, under the protection and the guidance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no other qualification according to the practice of jnana, yoga, or karma is necessary to practice bhakti. And this is significant because the other processes, karma, jnana, and yoga, to one degree or another depend on bhakti. So bhakti is independent, and the other processes depend on bhakti. That puts bhakti in an exclusive category. And so, not only bhakti is not dependent on the other processes, but the other processes are dependent upon bhakti. And there's an interesting story told in this regard. It's about a woman and her two sons. In this age of Kali, we know that it's a very terrible age for all types of endeavors, both spiritual as well as material. It's not that in Kali Yuga, it's just that material endeavors are difficult, or spiritual endeavors are difficult, but material endeavors as well. To accomplish anything in this age of Kali is very, very difficult. It's so difficult that the people in general become discouraged from performing any spiritual activities. It's described in the 12th canto, I believe, in the descriptions of what Kali Yuga will be like as it progresses, that people won't take any trouble. They don't want to take any trouble for spiritual life. If they're required to do something, to refrain from doing something, yama, niyama, there's a natural inclination to say, no, no, forget it. I don't want to take any trouble in that regard. And even people that do take the trouble to undergo some religious process or try to execute pious activities, worship the Supreme Lord, even if people go to take the trouble to do those things, it's really just based on a desire to improve their material condition in life. There's no idea of transcending this world, re-entering a spiritual relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, giving up birth, death, old age, and disease forever. Someone may practice, but not for the purposes of spirituality, but just to enhance their material circumstances in life. And so that, in that situation, began the journey of a mother with her two sons. And as they traveled in this Kali Yuga, they became unnaturally old, all three of them. Mother and the two sons became unnaturally old and decrepit. And so in this state, searching for some solution to their strange predicament, they came to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And when they reached Sri Vrindavan, miraculously, the mother became youthful again. But the two sons They remained old. Indeed, they continued to become subjugated by the influence of the age of Kali. And so the mother, now recovered from her old age and invalidity, was sitting on the bank of the Yamuna, and her two sons were lying next to her. Why was the mother revived in her youth? Does anyone know? You must know this story. It's told by Gorgovinda Swami. The mother who was Bhakti Devi had come to Vrindavan and been revived by the devotion that was there. So she regained her youthful potentiality in that form. But her sons, who were Gyan and Vairagya, remained in a very decrepit condition. And so she was sitting on the bank of the Yamuna like this, and Narada Muni approached. And seeing this scene, he became inquisitive. And so he went up to Bhakti Devi and asked her, "My lady, what happened? Why are you in this situation? And who are these two old persons, these old men that are lying next to you?" And she explained the situation to Narada. And Narada, being a kind Vaishnava, naturally wanted to help. What could he do? What could he do to help the situation? So he got instruction that if he goes to the Kumaras, Sanat Kumara specifically, and inquire from him, he can find out what to do to help these two old persons, these two old men, Gyan and Vairagya, become revitalized. And he heard from Sanat Kumar that if one hears the Bhagavatam, one's bhakti revives. And because Gyan and Vairagya are also dependent upon bhakti, that Gyan and Vairagya can be revived by getting that touch of bhakti. So Narada Muni came back and recited to the Bhagavatam, and the two sons, Gyan and Vairagya, became revived. Gyan, Vairagya, yoga, karma, all these other processes are dependent upon bhakti. That's the point of this story. They're dependent upon bhakti. So that makes bhakti superior to them. Bhakti takes you to the Supreme Personality of God. And of course, in this particular Kali Yuga, given that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared just 500 years ago, or as Prabhupada says, within the memory of everyone, we are very fortunate to be able to take shelter of bhakti despite our disqualifications in so many ways. And not just take shelter of bhakti, but get the opportunity to understand the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Krishna prema is available. The highest thing is available to us. Rupa Goswami was shocked when he understood this about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Namo Mahavanandaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tirse Namaha. He was shocked. What? The highest thing? Krishna Prema? Gopi Bhatta Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anadas? The ability to follow in the footsteps of the gopis and worship Krishna in that way is available to people with no qualifications, no jnana, no yoga, no karma. He was shocked. And indeed it is shocking when we understand the great fortune that we have. But that's the power of bhakti. It's such a powerful process. Such a powerful process. We should not miss the opportunity. Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir hokshaje. Srimad Bhagavatam describes that bhakti is para dharma. It's the highest and the most satisfying function of the soul. It's para dharma. Other processes aren't para dharma. They aren't. And there is an interesting way in which this was explained in an article that appeared in Bhakti Gaudiya some time ago. It was written by Prabhupada's godbrother, Adi Keshava Prabhu, or Dr. OBL Kapoor. He explained these differences, how the different paths are dependent upon bhakti. And one of the points he made there was that the paths of jnana and yoga, specifically talked about in today's verse, jnana and yoga, the paths of yoga and jnana are not eternal. They're not eternal. They can't take you to an eternal goal. What does he mean by not eternal? Well, there's another story about Prabhupada that indicates what it means, not eternal. Prabhupada was on a morning walk in Mayapur, and this was in the 70s, and so the land was cultivated differently there. There were big ditches, irrigation ditches, I guess there were, as most of the land was agriculturally utilized. Today it's otherwise utilized, mainly parking lot utilized or helicopter pad utilized. But there were the big ditches, and so when Prabhupada went on his morning walk, sometimes he would have to go up one of the inclines from these ditches. And so that situation came, and Prabhupada took the hand of one of his disciples who helped him walk up the incline with his hand. But when they reached the top of the incline, Prabhupada took the hand and he threw it away. Everyone was shocked. Why did he do that? So there was a teaching point. He said that this is what other paths are like. Even the guru in other paths is treated in this way. That you take the help to come up and you reach the goal, but as soon as you reach the goal, throw away the means. The means is discarded. That's what it means when it says it's not eternal. These paths are not eternal. Yoga and jnana are not eternal. By performing them, yoga gets us what goal? Paramatma. Jnana gets us what goal? Impersonal Brahman. And when one gets the goal, the practice is finished. The process is given up. But with bhakti, bhakti is eternal. So the process and the goal are the same. The goal, the end is the same. What's the goal of chanting? More chanting. What's the goal of devotional service? More devotional service. The process is the same. And this is illustrated in terms of the deity worship. Deity worship is prominent in our bhakti. It's an opportunity for all of us to express our love to Krishna in various ways. Even coming, having darshan, chanting before the deity, with the speak of serving, Prabhupada said that the pujari is the most fortunate devotee, because they're serving the Lord so intimately. Of course, there are many different ways that we can execute bhakti. Nine in particular. Nine or seven? Seven? Nine. Nine processes of bhakti described in Srimad Bhagavatam. But just consider worship of the deity. When Bhakti Vinod Swami was here last week, he was giving one program and he was mentioning how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken two points from each of the Vaishnava Sampradayas in his preaching work. And so one of the points taken from the Madhva Sampradaya was that the worship of the deity of Krishna and understanding it to be eternal, Krishna Murti Sevana. Our worship of the deity is eternal activity. It's not something less. It's eternal. Now think about that for a minute. It's eternal. It means that we will be doing the same. We're doing the same activity now that we'll be doing eternally in the spiritual world with Krishna. The process doesn't stop. It's begun, and it will continue. Which is a marked difference from the path of jnana taught by Sankaracharya. Sankaracharya, his philosophy, as commented on and pointed out in this Bhakti Gaudiya article by Adi Keshava Prabhu, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple, that Shankaracharya recognized that bhakti is necessary for jnana, and do you know how that was manifest? How is bhakti dependent, jnana dependent on bhakti, demonstrated in Shankaracharya Sampradaya? Well, they also worship the deity. They also worship the deity. But upon achieving their objective, the deity is rejected. Sankaracharya Bhashya on the Gita 8:56, if you want to look it up, it's described there. The necessity of bhakti for jnana is recognized even by Shankar, who says in his commentary on the Gita that jnana nista, or fidelity to knowledge, which liberation is impossible without, is itself the result of archana bhakti, or bhakti consisting of ceremonial worship of the deities. So they worship the deity, we worship the deity. Is it the same? No, it depends upon the qualification, the purpose for which one is worshiping. Sankaracharya and the impersonalist worship simply to reach Brahman. And upon reaching Brahman, they reject the deity. We worship in eternal fashion, understanding that the activities we do in relation to the deity are those activities which we'll do in the spiritual world. What type of activity in worship is done for the deities? What do we do? We cook for the deities. We dress the deities. We bathe the deities. Put them to sleep. Massage the lotus feet, make chandan, decorate them. All these activities are eternal activities. We're doing them now. We'll do them in the spiritual world. That's what it means to go back to home, back to Goloka Vrindavan. All the activities there are the same as we're doing here. And not just we're doing. Big acharyas in our line, they aspire for simple personal service for the deities and for the divine couple. We can ask Sitala Mataji when she's giving class tomorrow about Narottam Das Thakur. She's just completed in her book, Narottam Vilas. No, not Narottam Vilas. That's the book of the acharyas. What? The life of Narottam Das Thakur. You can ask her, what was his perfection? What perfection does he describe for himself and all of his bhajans? Does anybody know? She knows for sure, I'm sure. Narottam Das Thakur aspires in his songs many times just to make and serve tambulam to the divine couple. That, not that he wants, there's something radically different from what he worships the deity with in this world and what his spiritual perfection reflects. It's eternal, it's the same. And so, bhakti gives us this opportunity to engage in eternal service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas other paths, they're not eternal. That's an important difference between bhakti and the other paths. And of course, just one last verse which sort of sums this up. We've made the point by illustrating it with some stories. We can also illustrate this point that bhakti is superior because it's independent of karma and jnana, and that karma and jnana are dependent on bhakti. By quoting a verse taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna bhakti haya abhideya pradana bhakti mukha niskarsaka karma yoga jnana. Devotional service to Krishna is the chief function of the living entity. There are different methods for the liberation of the conditioned soul, karma, jnana, and yoga, and bhakti, but all are dependent on bhakti. So, with any reflections, comments, questions on this subject matter? Yes, Varuna?
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the nice class. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One is that while I was traveling, it was really nice to be able to listen to all the classes and kirtans, and I want to thank all the devotees who arranged it to make it possible. There's a lot more devotees listening to class than they're present here. So sometimes it may look like there's only a few devotees here, but whoever is giving class, they're giving to a lot more devotees. So. And then I also want to thank you for a nice class I'm related to you, so sometimes I don't listen to you. But it doesn't mean, it may be out of my stubborn nature that I don't hear you, but over the years, I have benefited from your, talks and all. But I may have a different way of showing it, but that's, just recently, this is the question now. That was the comments, and this is the question now. So, I was recently with a client, and she always professes that she's an atheist. So this time I visited her, she says, she's just in exasperation, she says, "Oh God Almighty." And then she says, she caught on, she says, "There is no God." And I said, "Oh, okay." Because she writes my checks, I don't like to argue with her. Lest I expect them to stop. So she said, "Well, one just has to be a human being and have good character. You know, you don't have to be a believer." So I thought about it, and then I said to her, "It doesn't matter whether you are a believer or you're a non-believer. A human being should act like a human being. He should have integrity and character." And so I said, do you think God wants his followers or who are so-called believers to be jerks?" Then she said, "Well, I never thought from God's point of view." She's an atheist, but then she says, "I never thought from God's point of view." So she said, "You know, come to think of it, yeah, why would God want people to his followers to be jerks? It doesn't make sense." I said, "There you are." So then I thought about it while you were giving class. I thought that, you know, the path of bhakti, you're talking about the path of bhakti, that how it's higher than the path of jnana and path of yoga. So, and there's so many verses that you don't have to even worship your parents, or you can give up everything. If you're on the path of bhakti, you can give up everything. So, everything else, and just worship Krishna. So, but does that have to be qualified? Like, that means that we really have to be on the path of bhakti, and we can't, you know, we don't have any other obligations, you know. Because to me it seems like, you know, if we say, okay, we're in the ISKCON movement, so we're on the path of bhakti, so we don't have any other obligations. So, but does that mean that we really have to be, you know, be on the path of pure devotion service so that we don't have to follow other obligations?
Well, of course, bhakti or any other path goes through a process of being, of ripening. You hear the story about the green mango. It's a mango, but it's green, and in the course of time it'll ripen, and then you'll be able to relish it. And so we may be performing bhakti in an unripe state, and in that state there may be certain things that we should do or we would do naturally and not be artificial about. It's like the Goswamis. The Goswamis were hardly eating. Raghunath Das Goswami just ate one bit of butter every 3 days or something like that. They were hardly eating. It's described in a song by Srinivasacharya. What is it? Anybody? Nidjahara Biharas. Yeah, they were like living very, because they were on a very high level of the bhakti. Now, can we live like that? Probably not. Should we aspire to live like that? Probably we should. But we have to be realistic of where we're situated in the path of bhakti and act accordingly. Even when it comes to renunciation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, "Go home and stop acting like a madman. The time will come when you can renounce all that. So just don't act like a madman. Mean try to run away and just every chance you get." And so everything will come in the course of time. That's faith. If we have that faith that by following this path that everything will come, and then no need to worry.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you, Sesha Prabhu, for your class. Not just this class, but many other nice classes that you have given. And I agree with Varuna that over the years I have made a lot of spiritual progress just by hearing you. So thank you very much. I agree.
No, okay.